Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 156, episode 3 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say officially off the top, fuck the Koch brothers, fuck Fox News, fuck Rush Limbaugh, fuck Ben Shapiro, fuck Tucker Carlson, fuck J.K. Rowling, and fuck Fondant. It's Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Hey Jack with the white thighs. Use a bronzer and they'll look better. Remember, a little goes a long way. Or your thighs will look like Trump's face. That is courtesy of Rob L. Reynolds 3. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Birds in the sky, you know how I feel. Miles getting high, you know how I feel. Jack's pale as thighs, you know how I feel. It's a new bong, it's the same gray, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Thank you to Hannah Ramwick View, Hannah Soltis. I know that's you on the Discord. Woo. Also, Jack, there's some heaters in here for you on the Discord. I'm going to have to start sliding your way. Oh, yes. Hannah Ramwick got one here that, oh, boy. Oh, boy. Woo-hoo. Oh, boy, Alberto.
Gonna scare the white off my thighs? Is that good?
it might even be in the lyrics.
All right. Well, we can't take any more time getting to our guest, one of the all-time greats. He has assured us that he has his recording situation all ironed out. He is the hilarious, the talented Chris Crofton.
How's it going? Thank you for that great intro. Guaranteed to disappoint after that.
Oh, come on, man.
No. Always. So happy to be here.
Always so good to have you. You're joining us not from Bear Country. You're joining us from, what's Nashville?
It's called Music
Country
City.
Music City?
Music City, yeah. But it's more City, like...
Country.
It's like Basic City now.
Oh, damn.
Why is that?
In your face, Nashville.
It's full of paper condominiums and full of whoever buys paper condominiums, and I'll tell you what, they're not musical.
Yeah.
They're not the real ones. Not the old Nashville.
It's like Williamsburg. It went the way of Williamsburg.
There's still good musicians here, but I mean, in general, there's just millions and millions of paper condominiums everywhere full of whoever buys paper condominiums. And I got to tell you, most of the time, I don't want to know those people.
Yeah. When you say paper condominiums, are they made of paper?
I believe so, right? That's the only reason.
Yes,
you say like
you
like
know
that.
the ones that go up in 45 minutes and are all ready to go and have the exact same floor plan and have the same appliances and everybody's like excited about that for some reason. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're just like these like yuppie prison cells is what they look like. It's like I'm a middle class prisoner in my stainless steel kitchen.
And you know, and they're like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of making up that they go up in 45 minutes, but they do go up very quickly.
No, they
do
go quick.
Yeah.
And they are made of, they're all the same, and then all the stuff in it is the kind of stuff that as soon as it gets dirty, like, you find out, like, you bought a shitty place. Like, it's like when it's brand new, like, oh, this couch is awesome, and then, like, the threading starts to come out, and then the fire pit. The fire pit on the roof doesn't work anymore, and the fitness center doesn't have anybody behind the counter.
And it's only got one dumbbell.
Yes, and the foosball table all of a sudden breaks, and nobody fixes it. And then you realize you paid basically, you're paying rent for a foosball table.
Yeah.
Is there a part of Nashville that is like gentrified pretty hardcore? Where like you know, 15 years ago, you're like, what's that part? Like, what's that part? Because I feel like Echo Park in LA was one of those places that initially, you know, for people growing up, it was, you know, very working class areas where I would go to get my fake IDs and any other nefarious items. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, oh, we love Echo Park. It's just so fantastic. What's like the Nashville equivalent?
I would say Germantown. Germantown was this sort of like, it was really kind of a poor area, and it's still adjacent to very low income areas, but then they just sort of just redid it. And now it's got, you know,
a bunch of PCs, paper condos.
It's got paper condos, and it's got the people that jog around like poor neighborhoods in like really expensive yoga clothes and just pretend that for some reason what the landscape around them doesn't exist, which I think is really weird.
Yeah, well, yeah. If my outfit is expensive enough, it might affect the other people around me.
Yeah, it's like, I just think it's about tuning it out. It's like, you know, they just say, I'm in a magazine, I'm in a magazine, I'm in a magazine head while they run. You know,
to the
mean?
Point like, about right. condos going up quickly in New York, I lived in Long Island City for 1 year, I think in like 2010. And then when my wife and I were visiting New York, like a handful of months later, we had to go back to our paper condo to see if like there was mail there for us. Like that's how recently we had been there. And like we couldn't find the condo. The landscape was so different. Like the
It
was so different. It was like when we got there, like 1 year earlier, it was like dog parks and warehouses, and then like it looked like fucking Tribeca when we went back to pick up the mail. It was wild. A lot of insider geographical references there.
But. Yeah, yeah.
Nashville's not like a grid. So the interesting thing about like in New York, all I know is that Nashville's like gentrified in spots and then not gentrified and then gentrified, and everything's sort of on top of each other. And that leads to a lot of like wealthy people tuning out their neighbors, which is like a really weird experience, because my next door neighbors in the house my parents live there now, but it's a fucking long, boring story. But me and my brother and sister lived there for 8 years together. We can do a whole podcast about that someday. But
that house,
it is. It's a TV show that involves a lot of panic attacks. So the TV show is called Panic Attack. Anyway, the house next door to mine is like used to be this crazy house full of people who their dog's name was Front Yard, and and that's true. They'd be like, get in here, Front Yard. Which is pretty badass. Like I will say that maniacs know how to name dogs. So someone got shot next door. There were twin brothers living there, and one shot the other one when they were drunk. And then that house, you know, they moved away. And that house was sitting vacant for a while, and then they tore it down and built this giant like paper condo thing that looks like a cuckoo clock. It looks like a house in Switzerland, but it's next to it's huge, and it's like bursting out of the property lines. Like it's like the most house you could possibly put on the smallest yard ever. I mean, this was previously a low income person's yard. It's small.
Right. Yeah.
And they packed it full of roof decks and fire pits and foosball tables and it's just bursting and it looks absurd.
Right.
And their neighborhood around it is still poor. Poor is like, I don't mean to say poor, middle class. I don't know. Like it's not like really poor, because what I mean,
has a lot of personality according to the real estate listings.
Yeah, I mean, just a regular street. It's a regular street full of people of various incomes. Like, yeah. And like, then there's this cuckoo clock in the middle of it. And those people just pretend the rest of the neighborhood don't exist. So you can't even really talk to them, because that would blow their whole like theater piece they're doing. So they're just like, hello to your neighbor. And they will not acknowledge you, because they're like, to acknowledge you would admit that you're you're a fake millionaire, because you came to a neighborhood. And just, this is the only place you can build that monstrosity. Go build it in the neighborhood where it's supposed to be with all the other rich people, or else build a normal house, dick. Right.
Boom.
All right. All of that being said, Chris, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment.
Sure.
A couple of things we're going to talk to, if we have time to get to them, are where the Trump campaign, re-election campaign, Creep 2020 is at. We're going to look at some historians who think we're headed for some very bad things, or at least could be, in terms of civil war. We're going to talk about that Pennsylvania voting case that the Supreme Court decided not to overturn. And we're going to talk about The Cabin with Bert Kreischer. I finally watched an episode and a half. All of that, plenty more. But first, Chris, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
Well, I would say I'm kind of running out of crazy things to watch. This pandemic gone on so long. I don't know what to, I mean, I've watched every dumb thing you could possibly watch, but I've been watching a lot of abandoned, just generally like abandoned house videos, abandoned like factories and abandoned mental hospitals and stuff. But here's something it's kind of just an observation about it. Watched enough of them now that I realized there, I've seen an episode where a guy showed up and a vlogger, you know, they call them vloggers.
Yeah.
Video vlogger.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
So it's bloggers with the video now, huh?
It really rolls up on vlogger. Yeah. Wait, vloggers. Vlog. What a lazy, like, who cares? they showed up to an abandoned house and there was already another bunch of vloggers in it.
Like they were shooting at the same time.
I mean, they have like the wackest West Side Story showdown of all time where they like turf war.
They kept saying how it was like spooky, you know, it wasn't spooky because there's someone, another person with a camera there, you know, so they had to go into each room. They had to wait for the other vlogger to leave the room so it'd be spooky again.
They were like, what was that? And it was actually some other vlogger saying, what was that? Was the sound that they heard? Yeah.
Yes. Like an echo. Like there's a doll in the house. And so everybody, when they see a doll in a house that's abandoned.
Oh, it's a fucking doll.
Yeah. They're like, it's not a creepy doll and it's maybe a nice normal doll. They still go, oh my God, that doll's creepy. So it's like an echo chamber.
Listen.
Walking through the, like one vlogger you can hear going into the room and going, that doll's creepy. And then the next vlogger goes in.
The vlogger industrial complex. Yeah.
And it becomes like, plant that doll. Does the vlogger bring a doll with them? So have a doll.
Oh, yeah. Of course. It's a planted doll. You see them. You see it all the time. These vloggers planting dolls at the scene of the crime. All these.
A doll is building 7.
Exactly. Hold on, listen, man. You could hear. Hold on, shut the fuck up. I think the doll's talking. Listen, it said like and subscribe, didn't it? Right. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
So I've watched a lot of that. And then the other thing I was noticing is that people are desperate. Like content creators, you know, it's like it's an endless operation. And there's only so many abandoned houses in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them. Like, you know, if it's just nothing in there, like, then it's pretty boring. But the good ones that still have the stuff in them, which are also super, really sad, because it just means whoever was living there died and, like, didn't have any close relatives, so all their stuff's still in it. And the people are, look, I wonder what happened to this person. All their heart medications all over the place. And
there's blood all over the toilet.
Yeah, the macaroni. Still, these people lived, like, crazy. And it's like, they didn't live crazy. They were old people. So anyway, I feel like sometimes people are breaking into people's houses when they're not at home and calling.
Now that's the next wave is cat burglar content.
Seriously. Right. And they're going to need to do it. They're going to be like, and they're just going to end up breaking in and being like, look, there's a man still in the bed.
I remember when we were talking about the guy who was caught camping on that like abandoned tropical island in Disney World in Orlando.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then that got me like watching a string of just like these kids who just get off on like just trespassing in Orlando, like at Universal or Disney World or wherever. And like, they're so slick. They'll literally just like jump fences, time it out, slip in through a door, walk through a concourse and end up in like some discontinued part of Epcot. And then, like, when they get caught, they'll be like, excuse me, what are you doing here? And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. I was looking for the bathroom. And they're like, well, you shouldn't be here at all. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And, like, they walk them out. And they're like, oh, shit, that was so close. That's, like, my high-stakes content now. I'm like, oh, little kid, you're going to get in trouble.
Right. And then they're like, yeah. And then the people are like, I wonder if that was, like, you know, like, I just think they're going to start being like, oh, it's a ghost security guard. Right. Like, no, I'm a real fucking security guard. Oh no, that's like, you know, like I just feel like there's a point where they're gonna break into someone's house and they're gonna be in there and the person's gonna be like, they're like, there's a ghost, you know, in here, and the guys gonna be like, no, I live here, it's my house. Yeah.
No, my house just needs to be painted, you asshole, get out of here.
Yeah. You know how much it costs to re-roof a house?
There have been a couple videos where there have been people saying, like, I'm not sure it's abandoned. And I'm, anyway, that's what I've been up to. I've been watching, like, these abandoned. And also just the question, is the place abandoned if it has 20 vloggers in it?
True.
Is a mental hospital abandoned if there's 20 vloggers in it?
Right. That's like in LA. There's like two like abandoned hospitals that like everyone shoots in, like to do like guerrilla style creepy shoots or photo shoots. And at a certain point, you're like, it completely isn't weird anymore because it's got like a bunch of leftover modern trash. And you're like, this just looks like some fucked up building. People are just like,
oh, shit. Look at that Dorito wrapper. I feel like that's old kind of Doritos that they used to have before.
When it was clear, when it was see through in the front window.
Right.
Yeah,
like a year ago.
when they did the retro bags.
Oh shit, that's so creepy. I remember that shot from Grey's Anatomy when Grey's Anatomy shot here in season two.
Oh my god, damn. Let me pose here. Yo, is that a Surge? Is that a 20-ounce bottle of Surge unopened?
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of like, I think that's old. That happens. I mean, that's most of those.
I think that's old.
I think that's old, or maybe it's not. They always say, like, there's three things they say. They say, I think that's old, or maybe it's not, but I think it is.
Right.
And then some, not again.
It's all kind of the same genre, like that Bigfoot hunting and ghosts, like where you kind of got to pretend like it could be, but also you got to be kind of real and be like, but it also could not be, but I don't want to ruin the whole illusion. So I'm going to pretend, hey, maybe it could be. I don't know.
Those
that's
videos,
a good gig, though.
Mostly waffling.
Yeah.
right. Yeah, because it's all about the mystery. So, like, by not knowing, that's like part of the fun.
Yeah, I like watching old. I love old shit too. So it happens to me, and it happens to me all the time. I'm always like, I think that's old, but then maybe it's not. I think it is, but maybe it's not. That happens. That's like all day for me.
Yeah, it's all day, bro. All day. What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated, I would say. I have a list of those things. I would say going over the Niagara Falls in a barrel is underrated.
Yeah, that used to be a thing, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's underrated because nobody's doing it anymore. And I feel like during a pandemic, it would really liven up make people happy if people would start doing that again.
Was that a thing where people lined up to watch somebody die in a barrel?
Well, the idea was that they would just die.
Does everybody survive going off Niagara Falls? Fucked. Like you break your hips on impact. Like your whole lower half is shattered.
Your hips? Everyone lived, but everybody broke their hips.
Yeah. In my mind, I'm just thinking of it. You're like in a cannonball, like knees hugged to your chest in a barrel, and you're just hitting ass down in a wooden barrel, and then you're just coccyx and everything just fucking just explodes.
It's nothing. Yeah. And not just your coccyx. People died. Lots of people died.
Oh, okay.
And no matter how big, how like well they designed the barrel, you know. It's a long thing but the problem is that you don't get the publicity you used to do with the news cycle. Now you don't really get that much publicity for it. So it's probably not really worth it.
Right.
You know, it's like, it'll just be a blip and it's a major operation and you are risking your life. So you don't get like the, I don't know how you say it. The ratio to like risk versus reward.
Yeah.
Is not what it used to be. It used to be if you did it, you were on the front page because there was nothing happening.
Huge ROI on that. ROI.
Trump has taken all the air that's supposed to go to people going over Niagara Falls in a barrel.
Watch, and now he's going to be, he's so desperate, he's like, look, fuck the debate. I'm going to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel. Then they'll see who's stronger. I challenge Joe Biden to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel. Like, that's the next thing, the next feat of strength.
There's a great Wikipedia page dedicated to this, and the first three people who tried it, Joseph Avery, unnamed, all died.
oh, shit. That's not a good sign.
They made the decision together. Avery and two other men had been working on a scow and drinking and attempted to row from Goat Island to the mainland when their boat capsized. So they didn't do the
barrel. Just fell to their depths off of Niagara Falls.
But Annie Edison Taylor in 1901 sent a cat over the falls in a barrel. The cat survived, and she then went over herself and survived.
Oh, I was hoping they would die. Be like the arrogance of like, I'm going to put this cat at risk. Cat lived? Great. My turn,
the cat
dead.
The cat was like, I don't need a barrel. I'm a cat.
Yeah. Always land on my feet.
Yeah. No problem. Throw me off the falls.
Man, things used to be boring. That's something I saw a headline that was along the lines of, are we ready for boredom again if Trump loses? And I personally am. I think we can.
Oh, me too. Oh, my God.
I'm
so sick of that motherfucker.
Yeah.
He takes up every fucking. I mean, he's been in everybody's face in a way that no policeman, no president. The way no policeman has ever been in my face. That man in my face.
It's it takes away your free will. It takes away your free will because he just determines what you think about. I guess unless you have,
and, just to let Daily Zeitgeist listeners know, Zeitgang, if Trump loses, we might be gone too. We might have to get out of here too. We don't have anything to talk about. So,
oh my God,
I've been thinking about you guys. I've been feeling for you guys because I really did stop listening to the news. I mean, I had to for a little while.
Sure. I get it.
Yeah,
it's sort of like, there's a level of when you have money in politics, until there's campaign finance reform, which there probably never will be because the people who have the money in politics right now are very happy about having it there.
Yeah.
We're just going to get corruption and it's going to be under Biden too. I just saw that thing about fucking John Kasich being in his goddamn being floated. Yeah. He's going to try
so
some
many GOPers. Yeah, no,
he's some bullshit with like, oh, we'll have a bipartisan cabinet and that'll be good for. Yeah, I mean, I'll never stop throwing up from that.
Right.
But, I mean, just the idea. Oh, I can't even. I just found that out right before we talked and that just made me so sad. But, level you can have a president, there's going to be a certain amount of corruption until something, happens. That makes the money fall out of politics. But until then, you could at least have a president that didn't bother you all the time.
Right.
Or lie to you all the time or it's just
only hard. Lies to you maybe 30% of the time.
It's exhausting. Yes. And you lie in like a tone that doesn't rattle everybody so much.
Right. It's like, just do it very monotone. And so when you say that I'm not actually getting any kind of equality, it at least doesn't sound violent.
Yes. Like just that, like I'll take a better tone. If I can't get like no corruption, I'll take a better tone. But, I realize that I don't mean to be too flippant because it'll be nice for him. He brought a bunch of racists with him. And I do feel like Biden would be less likely to stock his fucking cabinet with straight up racists. So,
yeah, just old school ones who know how to keep their mouth shut when it matters.
I mean, there's a certain amount of just like you have to be able to go through your day. Without being confronted by somebody just abusing you. I mean, he's abusing us. He's been gaslighting. I mean, there's never been that's the term for him. I mean, he's like he's an abusive person who gets off on people being upset. And because he takes that to be attention. Yep. Oh, I've got attention. It's like, that's not attention. It's people who are upset. It's not the same thing, but that narcissist don't know.
Is America ready to get out of this abusive relationship on the first try, though?
Oh,
that's the question.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
on the first try. Oh, boy.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And Chris, what is something you think is overrated?
Alcohol.
Mm.
As alcohol. A cleansing solution, as a disinfectant?
No, that's good. I put that on my phone.
Okay.
No, that's good stuff. I love that. No, if it's used for COVID-related stuff, go ahead. But just in general, as a person who used to operate and own a band called the Chris Crofton and the Alcohol Stunt Band, I feel like I every now and then should remind people that I used to be having panic attacks all the time. I would never have ever been awake right now. There's not a chance that I would even be awake right now to do a show, let alone have ever contacted a show or known anybody who would put me on a show. alcohol and, but I always wanted to reach people. Like I always wanted to entertain people, but I didn't realize how much static all that drinking was causing. But it causes a tremendous amount of static. It causes a lot of resentment and things you don't really necessarily understand because the alcohol makes it really hard when you're actively drinking. And that includes even if you're drinking a couple days a week, you know, and only getting drunk a couple days a week, because I tried that, you know, I'm only going to get a couple days a week, but those nights I'm really going to go after it. Well, that really is enough to shift your perspective all the time. I don't know how to explain it, but the alcohol doesn't go away. It stays in you. If you drink a couple times a week and you drink hard, it stays. You're confused. Anyway, I just want you to know that clarity is a lot more fun. And also, I think it's really daring. Anybody who's thinking about quitting, just think about it as a new chapter and an exciting idea. It's not some problem like, oh no, I never get to drink again, I'm a loser. No, it's like having a new chapter. It's like a challenge. Facing reality is like really, really noble, I think. Totally. And you know, and being present for people and like, you know, being able to like help them move. Like that's one thing an alcoholic never will do, but always will do. Yeah. Oh yeah, I'll help you move on Sunday morning. You know how many times I fucked up? You know.
Especially on Saturday night. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I made a lot of brunch dates for Sunday morning on Saturday. Oh, we gotta get brunch tomorrow, man. We gotta get dinner breakfast tomorrow.
And if you're an active alcoholic, go easy on yourself. Just stop saying you're gonna help people move.
Yeah.
You're not gonna.
Did you creatively, you know, too, because I know some people like, you know, the sauce helps, you know, people even say that with like weed. Like I can't really get creative without blah blah blah. Like, how's your creativity? Did you have that sort of in your mind too? Be like, I'm used to creating after while I'm drinking.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was afraid. It was like when I started taking antidepressants, I was like, it's going to take away my creativity. And now I've been on Zoloft for 20 years, you know, and I still am creative. And if I take away my alcohol, then I won't be creative. Creative. If you're a creative person, you're a creative person, period. You're not going to take that away with anything. It's not that sensitive. It's a big, probably a big chunk of you that can't be negated. You know, and what I found out about all that drinking, like the people, like, people used to think that, making art and writing were effeminate, were not man, like the old time idea of manliness.
Yeah. Right.
Writers and actors and everybody were all like sneered at by certain parts of society. You thought that was not like a manly activity. So
they had to like be hard drinking to
their heads off to cover it.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of when I went to high school and I was being like, I was like, listen, I'm never going to get laid unless I get to go to these parties. And those parties are run by 7-foot-tall blonde lacrosse players. And, you know, I just started drinking and those lacrosse players were suspicious of me because I was like smart. And then like, you know, they wanted like, but then once I drank, they were like, oh, I guess he's all right. Like I neutralized myself so they could find me less threatening. You know what I mean? Like, oh,
right.
All right. Look at him. He fell down.
But I mean, there are just definitely healthier ways to connect with your creativity. You know, I think both alcohol and drugs can be like helpful initially as like, but they're ultimately crutches and like performing something that like ultimately therapy should be doing for you or like actually like working on yourself, getting the blocks out of the way organically rather than by slowly poisoning yourself.
Yes. And I don't mean to say that nobody should smoke pot and nobody should drink at all. Right. I just, if you're in a jam about it, reach out to somebody.
Possible. Yeah.
Reach out to me. You can reach out to me, bestofbread@gmail.com. Seriously, if anybody's suffering.
Yeah, you can hit me up on
So alcohol Twitter. Is overrated.
Yeah. What's a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false?
A myth is that people think we're never going to do that podcast called Cold Brew Got Me Like. But we are.
Coming. It's coming at you.
We're going to do an episode on Thursday. We've had, we just have had Crofton related problems. We've had me running around and not being in one place. And anyway, we're going to do it.
Nice. This too shall pass, and we will get to that moment where we launch.
I'm going to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to talk all about all the cold brew things.
I love it.
All right, let's talk about where the Trump campaign is at. Creep 2020. It seems like there's a lot of negative energy coming out of the Trump campaign. What's going on, Miles? Yeah. I thought they were confident.
I mean, Jack, you've got ears, you've got eyes, you've read the things the campaign said, you've heard the things they've been screaming. It sounds like he's trying to get the fuck out of the last debate. Or at the very least, just be so whiny up top that it explains why his performance is so terrible going into it. It started off, you know, just being like, we were talking about yesterday, coming after Kristen Welker, being like, she's biased because she's a radical Antifa journalist who does shit like asks follow-up questions and won't just let my lies bang out loud. You know, great. And then, you know, that's sort of to be expected if, like, the person isn't, like, isn't Sean Hannity or someone cosplaying as Sean Hannity. And then they've pivoted to this whole idea of, like, this, like, you know, Kristen Welker put the topics out, like talking about race relations, talking about the COVID responses, things like that. But the president's like campaign manager keeps insisting that this is a foreign policy debate, and wrote, like, posted this letter that he sent to, like, the Association for, like, you know, presidential debates or whatever. And his tweet said, "We write with great concern over the announced topics for what was always billed as the quote foreign policy debate," end quote, in the series of events agreed to by both the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign many months ago. I don't think many people have had trouble finding where this was ever billed as solely a foreign policy debate. Even because, like, there's, you know, obviously topics that Trump doesn't want to talk about, but we all know that this whole insistence on foreign policy debate, this is foreign policy, where's the foreign policy, is just code for President Fuckface can only talk about Hunter Biden and can't get off of any other subjects. And the only way to get to Hunter Biden in a way that isn't non shouty guy at the bus stop kind of way is to make this a foreign policy debate. And they go on to say, you know, they're really digging this, digging this whole thing. This is again from the Trump campaign. "We understand that Joe Biden is desperate to avoid conversations about his own foreign policy record, especially since President Trump has secured historic peace agreements among Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain." Okay, yeah, that's an arms deal. So, yes, this is just one of the, he cannot let go of the Hunter Biden thing. Cannot fucking let go.
Is the third debate traditionally like a foreign policy debate? I think I remember that from before, but that is also typically when you have other debates.
Actual politicians.
Yeah, too. And actual politicians. This is going to be the first debate, because the one that was supposed to be the first one was just a disaster with, like, a bunch of interrupting and just madness. And then the second one, Trump quit on. And then so this one is...
Dude, he quit and then fucking completely fucked it up for himself. Like, he would have done better if he didn't even do a town hall and just let Joe Biden do his. But he was so stuck on the ratings thing, which he also apparently did not do better than Joe Biden in, is really hurting him. And the other thing is that, you know, he, with this Hunter Biden thing, he can't stop talking about it, right? He was on Fox Tuesday morning, just screaming, basically saying Bill Barr needs to fucking arrest these people or investigate these people, not now, but fucking yesterday.
mainstream media and many on the left are calling this a Russian disinformation campaign. You addressed that. Many of the facts now, though, are being confirmed and authorized. And some are asking, will you appoint a special prosecutor to investigate this? In fact, 11 House Republicans have sent a letter. They said the following: we request that the Department of Justice immediately appoint an independent, unbiased special counsel to investigate these issues that have been raised, as well as any corresponding legal or ethical issues that might be uncovered from the former vice president's 47 years in public office. Will you be doing that? Will you be appointing a special prosecutor?
We've got to get the Attorney General to act. He's got to act, and he's got to act fast. He's got to appoint somebody. This is major corruption, and this has to be known about before the election. And by the way, we're doing very well. We're going to win the election. We're doing very well. If you look at all of what's happening and all of the people that come in and don't come in, you take a look all around the country. And with Texas early voting, those are our votes, too. And we're doing well in Texas. I mean, I just got a report. We're doing great in Texas, but we're doing great all over. But forget that. This has to be done early. So the Attorney General has to act.
First of all, he sounds like shit. I'll just say that off the top. I don't know if he was taking a nap before that conversation.
He sounded froggy.
He sounded a little froggy, but yeah. I mean, just one detail of the story I had missed on the Hunter Biden thing that, you know, they had pitched that to the news section of Fox News. Yeah. And the news section of Fox News had said, no, we're going to pass on it because it's bullshit. We can't find confirmation. Rudy is untrustworthy. Like, all the sourcing on this is very questionable. Like, even Fox News was like, hell no. The way that they eventually got it published, the person who wrote the article on the New York Post has never before had a byline on the New York Post. And she is somebody who has a history of working for Sean Hannity. So basically, they just found a way to like launder a Sean Hannity opinion story into a actual like fake news outlet. It's pretty wild just like how much they're grasping at straws.
Yeah.
Like how little the story matters to people.
It's this October surprise obsession, I think, truly. Like they really, you know, I think they felt that this was going to, or at least the president thought this was going to help sway things a bit. But this is a completely, like, he's using the Hillary Clinton playbook on Joe Biden. And people know Joe Biden, you know, just a little bit, like, know him more than Hillary Clinton in the sense that they're not, like, waiting to hear some kind of corruption story and be like, yeah, I knew it, exactly, right. Hunter Biden. Like, those dynamics aren't the same, so this is where you start to see his lack of like savvy, because everyone is talking about like this shit is not polling. It's not even working as a news story, like let alone something that could, you know, change the trajectory of your poll numbers in any way. And you got like fucking what's his name? Frank Luntz out here screaming. He's just so fucking pissed because, you know, he's a GOP ghoul. And
he's
on a certain level,
and like for people who don't know, he's like the main like poll expert for all things conservative.
Yeah, I know exactly. Somebody went to a party at his house.
Oh, really?
And what happened?
In L.A. And he has like a whole wonderland of his favorite things. Like he has like a whole, he's so rich. He has like a whole fake diner. Like he has a whole actual size diner
with a whites only section.
Who knows? Like with working, with working soda guns and everything, and you know the whole thing.
Yeah,
and he's got like a venue, like a stage where he had some like kind of famous band playing. I think like
oh shit.
I don't know what, so, but no. here's the thing. Nobody.
Wait,
was
there's
there.
Another thing.
Nobody was there.
Nobody was no. there. He had a party, and just like your one friend showed up.
It was like she was somehow part of the musical thing. But there was nobody there. It's just the evildoers get all the toys, but they have
no friends. Yeah, no friends. It's a hollow black hole inside.
They sit among their ill-gotten gains and think, "What went wrong?"
Yeah.
What went wrong?
Speaking of him saying what? Speaking of Luntz saying what went wrong? His quotes on the Trump campaign are
harsh.
Harsh, not totally surprising,
because
he's very like establishment, and obviously Trump plays by his own rules. But this, you know, just looking at, you know, political realities, like that people, you know, when you poll people, nobody wants to hear about the Hunter Biden thing. Everybody's like, yeah, we don't, it doesn't really resonate.
Even his base.
Yeah, even his base is like, okay, we got it and we can move on.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah, they're like, but what about my prescription costs? No. Hunter,
but I mean, the most damning quotes are coming out of the GOP, like from, we've talked about Sass and other people.
John Cornyn.
Today's damning GOP quote is Luntz saying, I've never seen a campaign more miscalibrated than the Trump campaign. Frankly, his staff ought to be brought up on charges of political malpractice. It is the worst campaign I've ever seen, and I've been watching them since 1980. They're on the wrong issues. They're on the wrong message. They've got their heads up their asses. Your damn job is to get your candidate to talk about things that are relevant to the people you need to reach. And if you can't do your damn job, then get out.
Yeah, because he did his job. He rebranded torture, enhanced interrogation, and got his own replica.
Enhanced interrogation. What the fuck?
Just quickly, I think that the thing with the October surprise thing is Trump is so stupid in some ways. And so, like, he filters everything through, like, I don't know, media tropes or something. Like, I don't know, or he only pays attention to, he's like, I think he probably got confused and was like, he thought the October surprise was like a tradition, like Halloween or something. You know what I mean? Like, I think he got confused and was like, what's our October surprise? And they're like, well, we don't always have one. That's something that's like kind of a thing that happened, like, you know, what was the original one? The peace treaty in Vietnam was like, that's what gave it the name, was the, you know, Kissinger brokered the peace treaty, but then managed to make it so they would wait to sign it till after or whatever. I can't remember, but it's not like you always get a October surprise. They're like, probably like, Donald, we don't really have one, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's a tradition. He longs for the days of those, that Comey, you know, announcement about Hillary. And like, that was we need one of those. You remember what that did, baby?
I think he just thinks it comes with October. Like, he's like, what is it? Did it come up?
He's like, did we order it? Yeah, when did you place the order?
We get it? It's what? It's,
oh, I love an October surprise.
I do think, his instincts are not, they don't come from nowhere. They are based on the fact that he, like, mainlines talk radio and Fox News opinion shit. Like, just the opinion section of the daily Fox News offerings. But, like, that is good for turning out the base, but it's not, like, the, you know, it hasn't been enough to reach those middle Republican people, seems to be, like, the thesis heading into these last 2 weeks more mainstream Republicans.
I mean, despite a lot of the early turnout, because it's just been buku turnout in a lot of the states, Texas, Florida, they're like, we've never seen anything like this. The turnout seems pretty strong, but also keep in mind the Republicans have been aggressively registering people too. Yeah. I was looking at a comparison of the number of voters each party has been registering. Some have been like since March or some since August, and they are like 2x-ing Democratic registrations. You know, and that's something to always keep in mind is, like, despite these polling, there is just as much enthusiasm to keep this racist fantasy show going as long as possible as well. So don't get this. I know it's easy to see all this panic and it falling apart, especially with a lot of his internal campaign staff, like, starting to already, like, point fingers internally to, like, pin the loss on somebody. But I can't, you know, everybody has to make sure they're doing whatever the fuck they can to to get this motherfucker out, and as many down ballot candidates too, because there are a few states where there's, you know, on the brink of some historic sort of recalibrations of state legislatures too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just also, like, if he gets elected, if Biden gets elected, you know, that it's not just some kind of, you know, I know you guys must have talked about this, but, you know, it's not some go back to sleep moment. It's not like everything's fine.
You know what's sad though? I know there's definitely a large group of people who that's what they want.
Oh,
they're please just let me disengage. There were so many problems I had to think about, like wages and racism and immigration and things like that. Let me just you know, numb myself. So
yeah,
I think it's important that everybody holds as many people as accountable as possible.
Arab Spring or whatever. This is just all this is like, we're so corrupt in this country that this is like what we're going to celebrate is another corporate president taking over. I mean, right. That is pretty bad, you know?
Yeah.
This is not some moment. This is not, we haven't overthrown shit. If Trump loses,
no,
it's not some, all we've done is get ourselves in a big mess because none of us were paying attention to anything for like 40 years. And now, you know, so it's, and this is me too. I'm not pointing a finger. I lived in the suburbs for like 20 years and thought the news was something that just would work itself out. And it turns out that's not true.
Right.
Attack the throne and dethrone God via MSNBC.
Is that, what is that?
that's MSNBC's new motto. All right. Let's take a quick break. I want to keep talking about this because there's a historian who has an election corollary that he thinks might be more realistic than 2000 and might be more civil war-y. That's the adjective version of civil war, right? Yep. We will be right back. And we're back. So, you know, going along with what we were just talking about where, you know, it, nobody should be viewing this as it's in the bag, not just because of 2016. But so assuming the polls tighten, as they already appear to be doing, Biden went from 88 to 87 on 538 polling average, which is like the first time it's moved in that direction, I feel like, in months. So that would mean like we end up with approximately 1 in 10 chance of Trump winning according to those rules. But we still have only a 35% chance that Biden wins in a landslide. And if he doesn't win in a landslide, that means that the chances are, you know, it's like 65% that there will be some just historic fuckery going on.
Fuckery. Yeah.
And so there's this historian from Penn State who was talking about how this might be very similar to the 1876 election where the federal branches were split along similar lines, though back then Republicans were the party of inclusion. So it's obviously not the same, but there was a massive turnout. It's the biggest turnout in the history of a presidential election. There was massive voter suppression. It was the first time that Southern black men were voting, and it was also the first time since the Civil War that Confederate states were voting. And it was just, so they say that in a combination of partisanship, divided government, high turnout, and voter suppression produced contested results in Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. And when both political parties pursued extensive legal challenges over those results, there was an unprecedented electoral crisis. That feels very possible. Like the thing that we learned from 2000 is that it's all, when you get down to like a very close election in a state, it has nothing to do with who got the most votes. It's all about legal and political maneuvering and who is the shrewdest. And that has historically in modern history always been the Republicans. The big difference here being are all things that make our situation worse. They didn't have an incumbent president as one of the candidates. Ulysses S. Grant was done with his second term. They had just had the Civil War and so were less inclined to let things escalate to violence. And so one of the candidates just basically, he had a pretty good legal claim to office, but ultimately stood down to preserve the peaceful transfer of power, which I just don't see happening this time. No matter, I mean, I guess I could see Biden, like, even though he won, stepping down to avoid actual civil war. But it's just where I feel like people are kind of checking out and being like, well, the headlines all say Trump is fucked, so let's, you know, just assume that's the case. And we really are probably headed for something that is historically chaotic and devastating to.
Yeah, I think American it's going to be democracy. All or none.
Yeah,
it's going to be super fucking chaotic or somehow you're like, oh, shit, he really just ran. He really did just run away like that. OK,
yeah.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. He said he's going to leave the country, right?
Yeah, if he loses. I mean, yeah, I would too if I had that kind of legal jeopardy, except I wouldn't say that out loud so they don't catch me at the airport on the night of November 3rd when I'm like fueling up the jet to get the fuck out. Yeah. I'll be like, no, I will be here till the end, man. Are you kidding me? I'll face any legal troubles I have. Are you kidding me? Melania, fire up the jet. Oh, you still got that cough? Sorry, Ma. So the whole thing with, like, you know, this contested results, you know, it extends into this, the whole Amy Coney Barrett being seated in the Supreme Court as well, because the Supreme Court just declined to overturn a decision that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court had made that was essentially saying that they were able to count ballots received by the Friday after the election, as long as they were sent by Election Day. All of the GOPers in Pennsylvania were like, No. We just, if there's anything received after Election Day, it has to be thrown out no matter when it's postmarked. We just want those in the trash immediately. They were like, no, we're not touching that. So everyone was like, oh shit, great. The Supreme Court, actually cited to make it easier for people to vote and not invalidate these votes. But here's the fucking rub. So Chief Justice Roberts sided with the three libs on the fucking court, and it's deadlocked. It was 4-4. And that's what makes Amy Coney Barrett's appointment very troubling, because if there were to be another court case like this that makes it to the Supreme Court, and we're already seeing how these numbers are shaking out, she would potentially be the tiebreaker to fucking invalidate who knows what the fuck. And through her confirmation hearings, we've heard all the shit that she's said and not said very clearly. She's barely clear on like what people's rights are. She won't actually say whether or not the president has to abide by a court decision.
Yeah, she like didn't take a side that was basically, can the president just ignore you? She was like, well, you know, I don't know.
You know, that's like a political
thing. There's both sides,
thing,
and that's a political thing. And it's like, yo, that is, what? That just, yeah, that was basically like, do you believe in the monarchy? Like,
yes. She acted like she wasn't allowed to answer any questions at all about anything. Like, for some reason, like, I just don't think it would be appropriate for me to say whether I think that, you know, I don't know, just any reasonable question. Are you excited? Do you think it'd be nice if Godzilla came and stomped the whole country?
Yeah.
Be like, I don't think it's appropriate for me to weigh in
for
on
me
it.
To weigh in on that.
And she just has that that benign banality of evil vibe, you know, just like she has that stupid look on her face the whole time, looking concerned and also vacant at the same time.
While
declining to answer things about being like, do you think voter suppression still exists? You're gonna decline to answer that, or if voter intimidation is bad. She even said, if you're a felon, you know, you don't have the right to vote, but you got your right to own a gun still. Like,
what she said that?
Yes, she wrote an opinion when she was an appeals court judge.
So she's like, take it to the streets? Like, let's.
I don't know, but that's where, like, where do you extend that to, right? So if you're saying you don't have the right to vote, but you have the right to a gun, what is your right to a gun for? To protect yourself? Or is it in the Constitution to take up arms against a tyrannical government? So are you saying because we're going to invalidate your ability to vote, but you can't get your gun to take to the street? Like, what? I'm failing to understand the logic of that. It's like, well, you know what we mean when we mean by felon, we mean people of color, so you can't vote. But also, let's not make the people in the gun lobby mad.
Yes.
You can also have your gun.
And she doesn't know what she's talking about. And that's what
an
originalist is. And being an originalist, as she claims to be, is to say that you are an idiot. I do not mean that lightly. For real?
Heavily.
Yeah, I mean that for real. Like, I mean, that is not a smart person. Originalism doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. The Constitution is vague anyway. It's like, it doesn't even make sense to be an originalist, because then you would not believe in, you wouldn't even know what
believe
to do.
Believe in a woman's right to vote.
Yeah, you wouldn't know what to do if you followed the Constitution. I mean, it's just a stupid thing you say out loud because it sounds nice. Originalist. They're all about branding. It's just like, it's like originalist. I like the way that sounds. That's Frank Luntz territory. I'm sure he thinks that's great, you know, and it's the same with packing the court. I mean, they're all slogans. It's like, shut the, I hate it. And it works too, because they're stupid. I try and be, you know what I mean? It's like the people who follow them think they like those catchy things. Ooh, I can yell packing the court, and I can yell original. I mean, I like originalist. Right. That sounds like a rap song or something. You know, I'm an originalist.
Right.
Shut exactly. the fuck up. What does that mean? Ah,
oh, yeah. Watch me pack the court. I'm an originalist. Yeah,
they're trying to pack the court. They're trying to pack the court. Wait a minute. Do you just like saying pack the court?
Maybe. Yeah. Trying to pack the club.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, it's empty. You're not an originalist. You're a moron.
Oh, no. It's like, yeah, you're just saying like, no, it's not a bad thing to pack the court. It's like saying, I'm just trying to get as many people involved in the court, like the club, yeah. man. You're trying to get everybody in here. Nah, man, let's pack the court, y'all. Come on yeah. in. That's what we're doing. We're having a legal party in here.
Amy Coney Barrett doesn't know what she stands for. She stands for some vague idea of, like, it's like religion. She feels like she's imbued with some knowledge that can't be described or, you know, it would ruin mm-hmm. it if she told what it was, like, because it doesn't exist. Like, I can't answer that because I operate on a level where I don't examine my own beliefs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm merely so a vessel for darker aims.
She's law yes. priest. She's a higher being law priest who will make decisions based on the, like, God beaming their message down unto her. And none of that has anything to do with, like, whether you should have a fair election, but she will, apparently, the message that gets beamed to her will be that we shouldn't allow people to vote.
That's, yeah, I yeah, feel like
somehow congruous she is with vague. The rest of her beliefs.
She's vague in her answers because she's vague, I believe, in her head, and a lot of those people are, and they just leave it up to God, and then they don't have to explain themselves. They're like, why'd you decide that? Because it contradicts that. And they're like, I really don't want to talk about that because it's all originalism.
Yeah. And if I explain that, you will realize I have no place being on the Supreme Court because my biases are so over the top.
And so would she. I mean, I think that's the thing, is they can't even do it themselves because they would be revealed. They would be revealed to themselves to be full of shit. Anyway, she makes me mad.
Yeah. She makes, I think, a lot of people mad.
Banality of evil.
Let's talk about The Cabin, Miles. A little overdue. This is the show that was trending at the end of last week on Netflix that we decided to watch. And I also watched Pen 15 season 2, which I haven't given people a chance to watch, but we've been talking about it for a while.
Oh, man.
Y'all need to watch that. It might not be one of our official rewatches, but y'all need to watch that so we can start making references to it.
Out of respect for the show, you will watch Pen 15. And that is the most biased endorsement I can give. Shout out to Maya and Anna. Pen 15, it's on Hulu. Chris, I'm really curious to see what you would think about it. These two women, they're comedians, are really great actors as well. They're playing, they're like about in their early 30s, but they're playing like 13-year-old versions of themselves, but like they're the only people that are adults. Like their other classmates are actual 13-year-olds. So it's taking place in the late 90s, and it's dealing with, you know, just coming of age as a young girl in the 90s and dealing with all kinds of, you know, just kid shit in junior high, but it's done with this really great sense of humor. And yes, I will only say great things.
It's
about
like
it.
This.
And
what's your
connection?
Oh, so I know Maya and Anna personally, but Maya especially, our moms went to high school together in Japan, so she's like my sister. Like I've known her since I was born.
So you're not like technically involved with it. You're just like rooting for it.
Yeah, I'm just rooting for it. And I'm always telling her, I'm like, when are you going to show me in the show? This is fucked up. This
Hell
is
yeah.
fucked up. You know what I mean? But, you know, we'll see.
I agree.
Maybe we'll get a third and fourth season. But yeah, The Cabin, though, on Netflix. Have you heard about it, Chris? It has like just Burt Kreischer and just a ton of these comedians. So Burt Kreischer, essentially, the conceit is that like he's going way too hard on the road. He's going to city doing all these shows. He's not slowed down his imbibing, drinking, eating, whatever. And he just needs a moment to kind of get back to, you know, brass tacks, get connected to himself and earth again. So he goes to a cabin, and every episode, a new batch of like other stand-ups that he knows come by to like sort of tackle a topic, and not always comedians, like whether it's about, you know, in like trauma or like strength
or
your body and soul. But it's always like, it's an interesting show. Because it's like a podcast in that you're just hearing really funny people just talk about normal things, but they're so funny. It's interesting. But the added benefit is that they're giving them a lot of activities to engage in that inspire a lot more conversation and things like that. And I don't really know anything about Bert Kreischer's actual stand-up. I just know like of him as a brand. But there are moments, man, like that are just really funny of these interactions with him and these other comedians that I, you know, I got to maybe the fourth episode. I ended with the one with Kaley Cuoco because the Miss Pat just fucking, she torched that episode with just her energy. I loved it.
Yeah.
So it's not scripted. It's like a conversation.
It's like
conversation.
It's like a reality show, like podcast TV show, basically.
On Hulu?
This one's on Netflix.
Netflix. Okay.
Yeah, 10:15 on Hulu.
I'm staying at a friend's house. I got all the fucking networks right now. Watched that Ted Bundy, the new Ted Bundy thing where they interview. I mean, it's actually from the woman's perspective for once, like where it's like talking to the victims and talking to his ex-wife speaks, or not his ex-wife, but his longtime girlfriend speaks for the first time. And like, pretty good. And I also watched that, that bad show, the one about Wilderness of Error, the one about the Army Errol Captain. Morris. Fatal Vision. That new documentary is not very good.
It's not.
Errol Morris doesn't direct it. It's Mark Smerling who directed it, who I don't think has ever directed anything before. Mark Smerling produced The Jinx, but he basically just rips off Errol Morris and then also drags Errol Morris into like tack an ending on.
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
It's based on an Errol Morris book. I would say Pen 15, if you have the option, Pen 15 before The Cabin, but The Cabin is just more like, you know, it's Pen easy. 15 is great art. The Cabin is like a good hang.
I like that. You're just hanging out with fun people. How come I don't get to have a cabin? Anybody listening to this and wants to give Chris Crofton a cabin, give me one.
Exactly. No, I would just think it's like the format is so malleable that I would watch a version where it's the Chris Crofton's version.
Miles, what about Chris Crofton and Miles Gray's cabin where we watch movies that Chris Crofton hasn't seen, like Jurassic Park?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, we got to talk about that.
We'll definitely
got to talk about that.
Kind of a good idea.
But yeah, the show is, how many episodes did you watch, Jack?
I just watched the first one and then like most of the Kaley Cuoco one. is pretty good.
Why did you bring it up?
Because we do a rewatch every week where we pick something from the Netflix top 10 and just react to it.
Except we got to it late this week because I was out on the day we normally record it. So we shifted a day. Sorry, we didn't warn you, Chris.
Oh, no, it's fine. So anyway, yeah, well, I'll do one then. Go watch that that new Ted Bundy thing. And it's like, if you like Ted Bundy, and I don't mean that. I don't mean that to sound the way it sounded.
Yeah.
But if you like true crime stuff, Ted Bundy is an interesting character because he was like basically a psychopath that was the best at imitating being a real person.
Right. Mm-hmm. Kind of charming.
He had
the thing that we look for in our movie psychopaths, which is like he was really like engaging and smart. And so people, you know, that's what we always want sociopaths to be when we create a movie character, but they oftentimes aren't.
That Patrick Bateman vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
He raised his girlfriend's daughter, like, was raised by him partly. And she actually, she said he was great up until a point. And then he did some fucking Ted Bundy shit too.
Jesus. Anyway, the weird thing about the Bert Kreischer thing, the cabin, like he's up there supposedly getting, like it seems like his wife is like genuinely concerned for his health, and he's up there like partying instead, which is like funny, but it also seems like, I don't know. There's like a weird thing. The first episode is about like, you know, it introduces the concept that like, hey, I'm up here, you know, trying to calm things down in my life because I've been partying too hard. Bert Kreischer, as we talked about in a recent episode, was the inspiration for Van Wilder. Like he was like the best at partying in college of all time. But it's like they have Joey Diaz there too, who's like, you know, older comedian, and he just like looks like a I don't know, like,
like
a cautionary
old bulldog.
Yeah,
you ever have,
like,
somebody who has an old bulldog who's just laying down in the corner? That's,
it's like
Joey
the
Diaz.
After in a cautionary tale of what happens to Bert Kreischer if he doesn't settle down. Like, he just seems
Chris
like
Crofton's,
he's out of breath the whole time.
I want to do Chris Crofton's Cabin, except I'm going to have people no one's ever heard of, like my mom and like the next door neighbor right. and like the gas company guy.
Yeah. Front yard. You'll have front yard
front
there.
Front yard comes through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, gas company guy, get in here. Hey, scream something out about your frustrations with your father.
Get
Come
in
on.
Here.
Let's do this.
Get
this
in
be
here,
fun
gas
exercise.
Company. Get over your gas company. That's a great name for a dog too.
We did talk about the Kaylee Cuoco one when we were teasing this, so we should talk about that episode. So that's Miss Pat, who is,
and
just,
Joel McHale, Miss Pat. I didn't know her background. Like, she was trafficking coke.
Yeah,
and she's bad, and the way she does not hold back, you know, and she does it like it's never like. It's like one of those things, right? You know how some people they fuck with you because they love you.
Yeah,
that's like exactly what her vibe is. Like, she goes hard, just because it's not that she doesn't like you. It's like, you know, that's just how some people operate. It's like, I just fuck with you. That's just my mode of getting down. But the way she has Kaylee Cuoco just shook, with her, you know, saying like, I don't fuck with Big Bang Theory. I don't know what, I don't understand it. It's too fucking nerdy. And I don't know why y'all got paid $1 million an episode. It's done in a very fun way, although everyone else at the table is very uncomfortable, because I think it's one of those things where it's like a little too real. You know, I think we all know that $1 million an episode was doesn't make sense. But whatever. It's the biggest show in the fucking world.
Yeah. So she was. Yeah, she's in the Big Bang Theory, and Miss Pat is just like, yeah, that's, I don't think you deserve that, essentially. I don't think you deserve your success.
Yeah, I'm just fucking with her, right?
Who's Miss Pat?
She's
a stand-up comedian.
A stand-up comedian.
Who, oh, I've heard of. Okay, I was thinking, okay. Yeah.
But it's just, like, the Kaylee Cuoco thing is just, like, she responds the way a sensitive person would to that, and just, like, doesn't take it the way it's intended, and ultimately, like, leaves before the show's over.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think she had to go somewhere, right? It seemed like maybe she had.
Yeah.
Do you think she just literally was like smoke bombed out of there? She's like,
I believe so. I don't. Nobody else does. Nobody else leaves early, do they?
Note to self: if you ever meet Kaylee Cuoco, tell her how badass Big Bang Theory is.
Yeah. Hey, note to self: if you meet a celebrity, don't talk shit about anything they've done, or else they can't handle it and will run away.
I mean, I guarantee everybody involved with the production would swear up and down that she had a thing to go, and it was understood she would be leaving early, like, from the start. But
she Kaylee Cuoco had, like, I'm not used to being around black women energy.
Yes, that's right.
You know, she was like, I don't know if it's a joke. Do you not like me? I know you're talking loud. Is that anger? I don't know. Like, it's really intense. So I'm going to just go. I'm loving it. I love you, Miss Pat. Since she got her nipple shot off in a drive-by,
she's like, you only need one.
Oh my god, her whole story. I mean,
wait, is that
I'm
true?
Like,
yeah
she was trafficking cocaine back in the day. She was like, and she had actually gone to prison and then got into stand-up. Really interesting backstory.
A little bit about, didn't know that about the nipple though.
Yeah. All right, Chris, it has been a pleasure, as always, having you. Where can people find you and follow you?
You can follow me. Thank you. It's been a pleasure as well, Jack and Miles. You can find me on old Instagram at Chris_Crofton, where I put up endless cold brew got me like memes. You can follow me on at The Crofton Show on Twitter, where I almost every day do poems by request called Poetry Window. It's one of my favorite things I've done during this pandemic for myself, and I think other people have had fun with it too.
Yeah, they're amazing. The tattoo one I really loved.
Thanks so much. I recommend poetry to anybody. It's like, you know, it's kind of fun to write every day, and it's a way to do it where you don't have like to feel like you have to write a book. You can read my Advice King column. It's called The Advice King, and you can just Google The Advice King. It's through the Nashville scene. I'm very grateful to the Nashville scene. I'm doing a telethon for Marquita Bradshaw today with Third Man Records, but I think you can stream it probably. This show is not going to come out till tomorrow, but Marquita Bradshaw is a black female Senate candidate in Nashville. I think all things that have never happened, I mean, in Tennessee. And everybody, I'm very excited about her. She wants to legalize weed. I know you guys smoke weed. Vote for Marquita Bradshaw. And that's it.
Yeah. Is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Well, I like Buddy Anthony Diaz's tweet. I don't usually get vulnerable on Twitter, but this poem means a lot to me. I hope it inspires you as well. And then he put a picture of a poem that you can't read. It's too blurry. I like that. I like Nate of the Living Dead. Did Guns N' Roses only criteria for calling a place paradise? Number one, women are attractive. Number two, grass, normal color. So that's what I got.
I love that because there's like all these urban legends, like different cities claiming that it's their town. I think Louisville has it and like Indianapolis has it. And it's like, well, I mean, is your grass green? Because if yeah. so, you've got a claim. He's so specific. Miles, where can people find you? What's tweet you've been enjoying?
Oh, find me Twitter, Instagram at Miles of Gray. Also on the other podcast, 420 Day Fiance. Some tweets that I like. I just dabbled very briefly on Twitter and I came across some things that warmed my heart. First one is from past guest Caitlin Gill at Robot Caitlin. She tweeted, 7 years together and we still know how to have a good time. And it's her partner standing underneath a ceiling fan, trying to throw something between the fan blades to hit the ceiling and then come back down without hitting the ceiling Whoa. Fans. We've all played this game and she finesses the fuck out of the toss. And it's wow. so, I don't know. It's just so stupid, but I love it because we all know that thrill of being like, you did it. You fucking did it, kid. You got it through the ceiling fan blades. Easily, nothing happened. And then another one is just from at Will Summer, talking about, you know, QAnon stuff has been, you know, rattling around the news. And there's this guy, Austin Steinbart, who was arrested recently again, and he has to face a judge. And this is what Will Summer tweeted, at Will Summer, S-O-M-M-E-R. He said, some QAnon news. QAnon figure Austin Steinbart, who goes by the alias Baby Q and has claimed to be the leader of QAnon visiting from the future via time travel, just filed to act as his own attorney in a federal felony case. Wow. What could go wrong? yeah, and this guy really does. He has his own sort of brand within the QAnon world, but where he is saying like he is actually leaving clues for this present version self from Q around all this shit. But then he was also caught with one of those fake penises when he had to do a drug test. Also recently, so there's all kinds of stuff going on with Q World right now.
Oh
hell
man.
Yeah, man! That guy rules, except for the Q stuff.
Oh man!
At tweetpotato314 tweeted genie. Usually people don't make the same wish three times. J. Jonah Jameson pounding desk. More Spider-Man pictures. Dave Horowitz tweeted, "Want to feel old? Look in the mirror, you fucking." Fucking dinosaur, old ass bitch. he got me. I did look in the. And then Josh Gondelman tweeted, "Monotony comes from the Italian phrase meaning just one Tony, which is slang for a dull situation in Italy." You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what are we riding out on today?
You know, Moses. It's a Moses Sumney track. You probably know the original, Make Out in My Car, but the James Blake version. You know, James Blake, he just knows how to tickle those old piano keys or synth keys from time to time. So this James Blake version of Make Out in My Car by Moses Sumner. He's that. It's just got, I don't know, it's got those vibes just to get you through the week because it's hump day. So maybe, get through your hump day. I thought I had something clever and I didn't. So just I'll let the music do the talking.
Do love a James Blake remix. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We'll be back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to y'all then. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Sitting by the curbside.